Hello and welcome to Ex-Tumblr Girls, the podcast hosted by two ex-Tumblr girls turned modern Tumblr women. I'm your host, Tori.
I'm your host, Carly.
Let's talk about Tumblr. The synchronicity of the little. We literally started the last episode talking about that too, but it's who we are.
We just love to be silly.
We just love to be silly. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Before we get like really kicked off, I want to share something cool. I posted it on our Instagram. But if you don't follow us on Instagram, one, what are you doing? Two, please. Three, we recently passed 1,000 total streams for
Lay.
the podcast. We have 17 episodes out so far, and through Spotify, I'm able to see some really cool stats about our listeners. And Spotify tells us that we have had listeners from 25 different countries across the world.
Wow.
Our top listeners are from America. And then I believe it was England, Finland, and Australia.
Okay.
Where are our other top countries? Let me. Oh, yeah. I left one out. 6% of our listeners are from Canada. That's our second top country. But after Canada, the UK, Finland, and Australia make up the top of our listener base. So that's very cool. We're so excited that there are so many Tumblr girls or ex
We're
Tumblr girls,
worldly.
rather. Yeah. There, I mean, it's a global platform, you might say at times it was. But
Now
I
the
think
places that it reaches are the dark, dark corners of the world.
it's yeah. So here's to 1,000 more streams.
Yeah.
Or 10 more. We would be happy either way. We're just having fun. What's been up with you, Carly?
Well, still unemployed. That's okay. My unemployment check should be coming in soon. Really hoping, really holding out for that. I haven't really been doing anything. I've been playing My Time at Portia again, which I played for a little bit, like a couple summers ago. It's like one of those games. I mean, you've never played Stardew Valley, right?
No, but I know what it is. I played
Yeah,
Animal
well,
Crossing.
Animal Crossing is similar in the way that you have to grind. I love games where I have to grind. And it's like every time that I'm playing Portia, I get on there and I'm like, all right, I can't, first of all, I can't be high or drunk or anything when I'm playing. Like, I need to be stone cold sober so that I can focus on working on my workshop, building up my ranking, doing all the quests for everybody, romancing Emily, who's, the person I'm trying to romance in the game. It's, I'm trying to not spend too much time on it with all my free time, but it does take up some of it. Other than that, I've been watching The Golden Bachelor, which I meant when we re-recorded last time, that this was something that I forgot to mention again, but I love The Golden Bachelor, and I love like the bachelor himself. I think he's great. Like, I think he's probably the best bachelor I've ever seen. The women are insane, and just like the part that I love about the women is that when they talk about like their lives, they actually have like fully fleshed out lives. Like, when they talk
Yeah.
about, oh, I've built a really great life for myself, they're talking about like kids and a career and a family. And I think that's just, it's really refreshing. But it's not that different from the younger Bachelor. They have to do less insane dates. Like, they did like a pickleball date, which is so obvious that it's like almost feels like it was written by an AI. And one, like, I think two women got injured. So, pickleball is kind of as
Injured.
insane as they. Yeah, I mean, they have like, prosthetic, not prosthetic limbs, but like fake knees and stuff like
Oh,
that.
like hip replacements and all that, John.
But the sad part is that they are skipping fantasy suites, which I think is just really cruel. Like,
Why?
I don't know. They're skipping them.
Do they think that their audience is not interested in their sex life?
I don't know. I kind of am. Like, I'll be real with you. I am.
Fantasy suites is always the most dramatic part of the season. However, I will say fantasy suites, I feel like, has been tainted the last several seasons because it has just become a game of who is going to get mad that the other person's not a virgin.
Yeah.
Which is not going to be the case on the Golden Bachelor because they've all got kids.
Yeah. I was kind of, so I think that the hometowns are like premiered like last night or something, but I'm not caught up. And only three women went to hometowns. So I think that's, you know, that's how they're skipping fantasy suites.
I saw a commercial where the grandkids asked him if he was going to be the new papa. And I was like, whoa, that's intense.
That's a switch up.
My mom said she's not watching The Golden Bachelor, but some of her friends are. And she doesn't think she could watch it because he cries at every single rose ceremony. My mom thinks it would be too emotional for her.
It is very emotional, but also it totally makes sense. Like, you know, it's a little bit different with the Golden Bachelor because none of them are really trying to become influencers. Like, they actually are all there to find love or to be on TV. I'm sure there was a few that just wanted to be on TV, but for the most part, they all really like him. And does he remind me just a little bit of my ex? A more mature, older version of my ex? Yes. But we, you know, I think that he's been a good bachelor so far. I can't read him, which is crazy. Like, I completely, like, I made my predictions about, like, who was going to go to hometown. I was completely wrong. I got every single one wrong. So, yeah.
Wow.
I'm liking it though, and I think it's great that The Golden Bachelor finally premiered. I know we were seeing ads like for so long.
For like 5 years.
Yeah. It was a long time coming.
I got addicted to The Bachelor back in my freshman year of college when Colton was The Bachelor. I had between Colton and Gabby and Rachel, I watched every single season and every single episode. Like, we loved the franchise. And then after Gabby and Rachel's season, The Bachelor was Zach. And I was like, I don't give a fuck. And I just stopped.
Yeah, me too. And like, now, like, when I see previews for Bachelor in Paradise, I'm like, I don't know any of these people, so I don't care.
Well, I did see that Hannah B is going on Paradise, which is crazy for her. And I kind of love it.
I know Rachel went on.
Yeah. But I saw previews of Hannah B. And I was like, well.
A big part of me quitting The Bachelor was that my favorite Bachelor podcast ended up quitting, the Chatty Broads. I loved them. And I listened to their recaps every week. So yeah, rip to them. But I'm liking The Golden Bachelor. I guess they're going to do a Golden Bachelorette, which I think will be so fun. And that I'm looking forward to. If they end up doing
that,
it.
That I would watch.
Like, that'll be fun. But yeah, I've been watching that. I also just finished season 2 of The Bear, which I know you never watched it. But I watched
part of the first episode and I wasn't hooked.
It's fair. I've heard it being called the succession of the working class, which I kind of love that description.
I did try to watch Succession. I looked for it the other night. I was in my apartment and I was bored. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to start Succession. And then I found out that I don't have HBO Max.
You got to change that.
I don't know if I want to pay for HBO Max.
Never. Going back to The Bear, I would like to have a moment of appreciation for the John Mulaney, Sarah Paulson couple cameo. You would think, you know, Sarah Paulson, John Mulaney, they wouldn't fit. But do they fit? They fit. They fit. Their couple was awesome. Like, I just wanted to mention that. And tell everybody to go watch The Bear, because I love the show. I think it's great, but
maybe I'll give it another try. I'm not watching anything right now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to watch now that I'm done The Bear. That was kind of like the last thing that I needed to watch.
There's like fucking nothing good left on TV.
I rewatched The Last of Us, so
of course
I finished like my fifth rewatch of it today.
Maybe I'll rewatch The Handmaid's Tale or see if there's anything new on Hulu. Yeah. I don't know. I'm just not compelled by the options that the streaming services are giving me these days. However, I rewatched Squid Game over the weekend. Nice. And that was so fucking good. God, that show is so good. And so because this past week was Halloween, I was like, I spent a lot of October like watching horror stuff. So like I rewatched Haunting of Hill House. I did do a rewatch of Haunting of Bly Manor. For those who listened to the last episode and I said I didn't remember anything about it, I quite loved it. In fact, it was nice. Very, very good. And I like its differences from Hill House. I still stand by the fact that I like The Midnight Club more than I liked The Fall of the House of Usher.
Mm-hmm.
Now that all of the Mike Flanagan shows are ripe in my mind. But what I didn't like is some movies that I watched. I watched Mike Flanagan's movie Gerald's Game, which, if you haven't seen even the trailer for it, it's about a woman. This is not a spoiler. This is like literally the trailer. A woman who is doing some sexy stuff with her husband, and he handcuffs her to the bed, and then he has a heart attack and fucking dies while she's handcuffed to the bed. And they're out at a lake house where no one can hear her. And it is like, it starts off and I'm like, okay, psych thriller. And then it gets dark, and then it gets violent, and then it gets really scary, and then it gets body horror, and then the ending makes no sense whatsoever. And so I do not recommend watching Gerald's Game, because the body horror scene, I literally couldn't sleep because I was like,
oh my God,
about to throw up. And then I just didn't like that movie. I just didn't like it. So nothing inherently wrong with it, just I don't like it. Some things I did like, however, I finally watched Archive 81.
I've never heard of that.
Which is a horror show about a guy who is asked to digitize a collection of VHS tapes. And so it's sort of found footagey, but it's also demonic possession, and it's like, there's like a time warp. It's really good.
I didn't really watch any horror movies like leading up to Halloween, except for the one with Nicolas Cage. It's not like you can only watch them in October.
It's that some streaming services only host them October. They buy the rights to them for 1 month. I did watch Us. I watched it literally right after we recorded our Horror Hotties bracket, and it was really, really, really good. And then I went on to read a bunch of explainer articles to see if I understood the ending correctly.
It happens to everybody. We all have to read an explained article.
Yeah. I have been wanting to watch The Menu. I don't feel like paying for it. I want to watch Ready or Not. I don't feel like paying for it. I want to watch The Vavitch with Anna Taylor-Joy, don't feel like paying for it. So these are all on my list. And if they will happen is, you know, to be determined. But I have been listening to a new podcast that this is my last thing, and then we'll like get into the episode. I started listening to a podcast about horror movies because I've really like not been listening to like a wide variety of podcasts these days, and I'm really into like the concept of podcasts, so I was like, I need to find new ones. And I don't even remember how I found this one. I don't remember. Maybe it was just suggested to me on Spotify, but it's called Too Scary, Didn't Watch. And it's a horror movie recap podcast where two of the hosts do not like scary movies and the one host does. And she walks her two friends through a horror movie scene for scene, like line for line.
Oh my
and
God.
She explains every little detail of the movie. And that's awesome. It. It's so
We should
fun.
Have listened to some of those in preparation for our bracket.
Yeah,
when,
if
with
I'd
the
have
ones we
known
didn't
about
know.
Too Scary Didn't Watch, I would have, you know, prepared better. But I've been listening to it. So far, I've actually only been listening to ones that I have seen because now it's making me want to watch things so that I can listen to the recap and really enjoy it. But, well, that's not true. I listened to a couple that I haven't seen. I listened to the one on Smile, which I haven't seen because I thought it was going to be too scary. And on Happy Death Day, which I might have seen, but I don't remember. And now I'm listening to The Evil Dead, which I know is too scary and that I don't want to see it.
Yeah, I've heard that one's pretty bad.
And what I've learned from our horror bracket, when Carly and I were saying that, like, we really prefer psych thrillers over, like, scary and body horror, I realized that, I only like thrillers. I don't actually like horror. Kind of like I like the concept of scary, but I don't like anything gory.
Yeah, we so, both suffer from debilitating nightmares, so we
yeah,
should probably
like,
not be seeking out more
no,
horror.
Like, I don't think I am clinically built to be a horror girly. Like, I can deal with suspension, I can deal with some mystery, I can like deal with a little like mind trickery, but when it comes to like, this is why I don't listen to true crime anymore, because I don't like anything with like mutilation, and that is normal.
That is really fine.
And I stand by it. So that's just my update on life, and actually me deciding I'm not gonna watch movies that I know are too scary for me anymore is a part of my self-care.
Self-care. What does that even mean, really?
What does it mean to do self-care? Is it like when you buy a meditation course out in Palm Springs? That's self-care, right?
I mean, I kind of think self-care is like going out and buying yourself a little treat every day, even if that little treat's like $120.
Yeah, like my self-care is like when I, you know, like walk to the coffee shop and I spend $9 on a bagel. That's my self-care. That actually is my self-care sometimes, but let's not talk about that.
Bagels should not be $9, and I'm so sorry.
The bagel is only $9 when you buy a bagel that's $4.50 and you tip like 70% because you brought your dog into the bagel shop and you feel so grateful that they were kind about your dog being there that you tip 70%.
You self-cared to them.
I self-cared their rent this month.
Self-care is now a verb.
Wait,
verb, adjective, noun.
From now on, we can use it interchangeably. So that's the tone for the episode, is self-care can be anything, even linguistically.
But I do have some actual research about the origins of self-care that actually were serious originally, which is, you know, we really shouldn't be surprised that with everything that is a part of our cultural lexicon, it started with the Black feminists of the 1960s and 70s. We should all just kind of accept that that's going to be the norm.
Most revolutionary concepts have been deeply watered down.
Oh, yeah.
In the social media age. So if there's anything ever that feels like, wow, that thing is so good for the world, it didn't come from Instagram. I can promise you that much.
Nope. But self-care, it actually was originally used in medical settings.
Wow. That's wild. Yeah. Why would it not be? It has the word care in it.
But it was kind of, you know, what we would kind of think of self-care as, but it was used for the elderly and people with chronic illness, just on, you know, how to care for themselves, pretty self-explanatory. And then it got kind of co-opted by women's rights and civil rights activists in the 60s and 70s. And that's kind of how it entered public awareness outside of a medical context. So yeah, so in the 60s and 70s, activists, civil rights activists and women's rights activists kind of pushed to redefine healthcare beyond the treatment of the individual body because, well, the healthcare industry wasn't really doing it for them at the time. So they, you know, were including what the effect of race, gender, class, sexual orientation has on health, which wasn't really, you know, a part of the healthcare industry before then.
And is seldom a part of it today.
So true. So the women's rights movement, they opened women's specific clinics to combat sexism within the healthcare industry. Because if you're a woman, you know that nobody takes us seriously when we talk about pain or anything. And then the civil rights movement also recognized healthcare as like a major site of injustice. So it was actually the Black Panther Party that kind of took self-care really seriously. And they implemented these free community service programs that included clinics to provide testing and preventative care for diseases common in the Black community, like lead poisoning and sickle cell anemia. I wanted to say that's really cool. Sickle cell anemia is not cool, and neither is lead poisoning or racism, but it is cool that they did these things.
Community resources are very cool.
They are. Yeah, unfortunately, by the 80s, these were kind of dismantled due to the government targeting the Black Panther Party. Yeah, not surprised there. But Audre Lorde was kind of one of the biggest proponents of self-care. And she has this quote, she has a couple quotes that I'll say. And one of them is, "Caring for myself is not self-indulgence. It is self-preservation. And that is an act of political warfare." So,
wow.
Queen moment. So yeah, so she's like a Black lesbian feminist. So
we love Audre Lorde.
She knows what she's talking about. But she also never really, when she talked about self-care, she never really separated it from community care. Even though now it is kind of separate. So another quote of
that. I'm gonna get into that.
So another quote of hers is, "In the bleakest of days, I am kept afloat, maintained, empowered by the positive energies of so many women who carry the breath of my loving like firelight in their strong hair." What a writer, for real.
What a beautiful poet she is.
So in the 60s and 70s, self-care was really strongly associated first with medical care and then later with activists. And then it kind of started to coincide with wellness trends that were popular with hippies and the hippie movement, which wasn't really about rights as much as it was about improving your quality of life. So it kind of started to get watered down, even though it's not like hippies had any like bad intentions. It was really capitalism that had the bad intentions. And wellness lifestyles in the 80s started entering the mainstream and started, you know, being co-opted by brands and, you know, supplement companies and things like that. And that's kind of where I think self-care is now. It's pretty much associated with wellness. And wellness is more associated with the wealthy and with commercialization, and has really been separated from the people that probably need self-care the most, which is the people that the healthcare industry doesn't work for right now and in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah. I think that's interesting that it began to shift in meaning as it hit the hippie movement, because my immediate thought when you said that was that the hippie lifestyle was, even though I think in the American historical lens gets taken as this like radical thing of like changing the way we live, brother, it like really wasn't. I don't think, like, yes, no, there is something to be said about like the students and the young people who were like anti-war within the hippie movement and like the free love movement and what that did for like women's sexual and reproductive rights, like, right, there's things to be said. But I also feel like something that might have been happening is the concept of like personal freedoms. And as you were saying, wellness and quote unquote self-care has really moved away from being a community healing thing to being a personal optimization tool. And that is like so deeply sinister to me.
Yeah.
We're going to bring it back to a place of me calling things sinister and horrific like I did in the Cocoa Bot episode. because I am actually like fucking disgusted with the concept of the wellness industry. So
yeah.
Like Carly just described this like beautiful radical concept of like other people supporting you and like making space for your community and like, you know, being there for people when the systems that are in place to that are supposed to take care of you do not. And I think those issues still resonate with people who need self-care, but self-care has become such a mainstream term in that anything can be labeled self-care, and it's no longer about, okay, well, to back myself up, just a quick step. The way that I personally like understand and define self-care is through anything that's like good for your mind, body, and spirit, right? Mm-hmm. I base a lot of my definitions of care and love on Bell Hooks's All About Love essays. Mm-hmm. And the way that she defines love is to care about someone's spiritual well-being. And so when I think of self-love, it's like, what are you doing to improve your mind, body, and spirit, and like the synergy between them, right? Not to get
bagels.
Yeah, period. Like bagels. And I think self-care in the mainstream has moved away from like what is good for your mind, body, and spirit to what makes you a better version of yourself. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that that better version is being sold to us through the lens of capitalism. And the best version of yourself, quote unquote, in capitalism is the one that can do the most work for the most hours with the fewest complaints. Mm-hmm. And none of those things are actually good for you in any fucking way whatsoever.
No. And spending the most money.
Oh, yeah. Don't forget about that one. Is work super hard so you can make a lot of money so you can spend a lot of money. And so self-care is now considered a multi-billion dollar industry. That's right, folks. Self-care is an industry. It's a type of brand that you can run. And so a couple examples of just how far this has strayed is that when you Google self-care ideas, because I was like, I want to see what comes up.
Yeah.
The first like 10 results are articles and blog posts that are like 39 free ways to do self-care. The 10 best free self-care experiences you can have. And my immediate like physical reaction to that is like, what the fuck do you mean you need to name off the free ones? All self-care should be free.
Yeah.
Because it's something especially that you're doing for your like your mind, body, and spirit. Like those are things you're doing for yourself. It's not supposed to cost money. Like,
yeah. Especially with how expensive the world is. Like,
right.
Jesus. Like I don't need to if I have to spend money to feel better, that's really, it's really dark. It's a really dark.
Right.
Place.
Like taking care of yourself and feeling good should not like cost a lot of money. But people now sell meditation courses and they sell branded journals, like and then there's the girls on TikTok selling the crystal that'll fix your life. Don't even get me fucking started on spiritual materialism because I listened to too many podcasts about it and I'm pissed off. But something that I find really interesting is how this falls so much on women. Wellness is like very much a women-driven industry. And I want to bring it to a place of the Goop of it all.
Oh my God. I was going to mention Goop.
I want to bring it to Goop. A place of Goop. This is kind of like the pinnacle of the capitalist wellness brand, is that if you don't know Goop, I'm so jealous and I'm also about to break your spirit. Goop is a brand started by Gwyneth Paltrow, who is an actress, I guess, was at one point. I literally couldn't name anything she's done other than played Iron Man's wife in the Marvel movies.
Do I think now else. Goop is her career?
Yes. But she at one time was an actress, I think.
Yes.
Maybe she was a model. I don't really know.
I'm pulling up my presentation on Goop right now, the dangers of celebrity wellness culture for my biomedical issues class.
So Goop was a lifestyle blog when it first started. She was just talking about like what she eats and like the workouts she does. And it quickly became a way for her to sell a version of her lifestyle. And Gwyneth Paltrow has all these hippy-dippy ideas about wellness, but they're all really expensive to maintain because it's all like juice cleanses and keto diets and million-dollar Pilates classes and all these other weird things. And it's devolved. She's strange. But basically, she was selling all these products and courses and experiences that would theoretically give you her lifestyle, and her lifestyle was healthy, right? She's like selling the key to her wellness and all the things that she does for self-care.
Mm-hmm. And all the products that she developed for right. self-care. Like, and so, okay, I'm looking at my, sorry, I wanted to just, I'm looking yeah, at yeah. my presentation now, and now I'm being reminded of her $250 fasting kit, which if you know what fasting is, you know, eating nothing shouldn't be costing you $250. And then you forgot, I mean, I don't know if you were going to mention the egg, the yoni egg.
Oh, the yoni egg.
Everybody knows that bacterial vaginosis is the key to self-care. She, for those that don't know, like, she ended up settling a lawsuit because she was claiming that these yoni eggs were going to improve your sex life, balance your menstrual cycle, intensify your feminine energy, she said. And all they did was give people infections. Because don't put rose quartz in your vagina. Just don't do it.
Yeah. So this is really the state of self-care in capitalism, is selling snake oil. And like, it's just people, the best way I've heard it put is that like, it is very related to spiritual materialism, and that people are trying to sell you God, right? Mm. People are trying to sell you your body feeling better in a system that is inherently not made to make people feel good. And so this concept that wellness and self-care are this expensive thing has made it such that every practice of self-care is associated with becoming more wealthy, or that self-care can only be accessible to the wealthy because of the correct self-care practices. And even when it's not costing money, it's still about optimization, right? Mm-hmm. It's feeling your best. It's often paired with looking your best. Mm-hmm. It's feeling your best so that you can do more. An emphasis on more. And like, mm-hmm. it's also always do more for others. And I think it's really bad when companies like encourage their employees to do self-care, because the undertone is that if you are happier and calmer and more well, whatever the fuck that means, then you'll be a better employee. And that's mm-hmm. really where self-care is at. So I'm rambling, right? But I read this really amazing article that very much reflected the things that I think and feel about the state of self-care under capitalism. The Harvard Business Review, shocker that they wrote something intelligent and perfect. This is back from 2018. And so things have gotten worse, I would say, especially because of the pandemic and people started doing like at home everything. You know, just the Pilates of it all.
It was messy.
Yeah, the pandemic made everything worse, of course, in every way. But self-care really took a turn, I feel, for the worse during those years.
Because, well, also, the one thing that we didn't have was community. We couldn't see anybody. And that was where self-care originated from, was community.
Well, it's also like human connection nurtures your spirit. Like, it is good for you. Like, spending time around others, like, is just good for you biologically. But the Harvard Business Review made some really interesting points that were not in that rant that I just went on, right, about like materialism in self-care and the spending money part of it. But they were speaking, or not they, their author, Charlotte Lieberman, was speaking to the point of optimization. And she writes, our focus is shifting away from the actual self, our minds, bodies, and spirits, towards data about the self.
Ooh.
So earlier when I said I wanted to talk sort of about that individualism thing, that whole idea that self-care is making us selfish, that's not ever what self-care is. Taking care of yourself is never an inherently selfish thing. But the way that self-care is promoted today, I feel, is very self-centered and is very much not about like, do I feel good? Do I feel happy in my relationships? Do I like feel like I'm treating myself well? Like, those things do make you a better person in other people's lives as well. Like, when you take care of yourself, it nurtures your relationships for sure. But when you collect data about your sleep cycle and how many calories you've burned and your screen time and your everything, like how many centimeters your hair has grown this month, it's making you obsessive about your body and yourself in a way that doesn't actually take any care of you. And that doesn't actually make you a better person. It doesn't nurture you in the way that makes you like more connected to others. And so the author writes something about like the to-do list mentality, right? Of all these ways that you have to track your care so that you can do it right, when inherently there is no correct way. She writes, if your to-do list mentality is a major source of stress in the first place, why add to it? The goal is to create space for yourself to experience curiosity and explore it without pressure. And I just loved that definition. And then the last one quote that I'll read from her will go into my last ranting point, which is, she writes, Instagram in particular pressures us to share our personal victories and turn them into opportunities for self-marketing. And I know I'm always talking about, well, I don't know if I am on here, but in my life, certainly I am talking about, if an Instagram post is a carousel made on Canva, you should almost never trust the information that it is sharing to you. This is the truth with the account at Shit You Should Care About. This is any account that is just like mantras about self-care.
Yeah.
Because so many of them promote this weird hyper individualism of like, you are your best self already. And everything you do to improve your best self is correct. And anyone who doesn't like it is fucked. Tell them to get fucked. Like, oh, and it'll say things like, tell people to get fucked. I swear to God, like it will. And it'll be on like a drawing of a cactus.
I know the exact type of post you're talking about. And it's also, it's not even like, those feel like they're in very like women-centric spaces, but yes. They don't even feel all that different from like the manosphere type of shit that, you know, is in those spaces, which is basically all the same thing. It's like, except it's just women are terrible people and you have it within yourself to become the best man. And you just have to, you know, work out and hate women.
Yeah. Women's content is more like, if you do everything right, and there is a right and a wrong, if you do everything that feels right, if you listen to your OCD hard enough and do everything it tells you to do and get as skinny and blonde as possible, then you will be your best self. And any of your friends who don't like it can suck it. Like,
yeah.
And I know that that's not what all of them say, right? Whatever. There are ones that are like, everything that you deserve is coming your way because you've earned it, right? Like, that's a nice sentiment or whatever. But it's not actually self-care to read that post. Like,
I think that some influencers have gotten really good at eliminating the bullshit. That doesn't mean that it's not still bullshit. You know, it's still filtered through a marketing lens. I think that people have been called out enough that they're going to start to phrase it in a way that's, you know, more authentic. And I say that with air quotes, because really nothing we see on social media is authentic. So that's why, like, I really don't take any self-care advice from social media, because it's so individual. And I'm with you. Like, I think it's all bullshit, basically. And what I see as self-care is just so separate from what the internet sees as self-care that I don't even, like, I feel like my definition is completely separate. Maybe on Tumblr, it's a little bit more focused on mental health because it's, you know, everybody there is depressed. But on Instagram, it's like way more focused on looks and optimization, like you said.
Yeah, that Harvard Business Review is so true about, like, it's all about being, like, having victories and, like, sharing your victory and, like, showing people how good you are at taking care of yourself. Because it's, like, in our society, you just can't do anything well without telling someone about it. Yeah. And that is why I feel like the broad understanding of self-care is so antithetical to what caring for yourself is as an action, because I find personally that the things that I do that are best for me are the things that I do entirely privately, or the things that I, like, maybe I tell my friends that I'm doing them or that I'm being more conscious about this thing and that it feels really good. But it's not things that I do that I could, like, tangibly in any way share on social media without making, like, a video essay about how good I am at taking care of myself.
And I don't think that that really helps anybody either to see that, because it just leads to comparison. And comparison is the thief of joy, which I say that all. I have, like, a post-it that says comparison and the thief of joy all over my room back at my parents' house, because I truly think that social media is, like you said, what is the word that you've been using? Sinister? Like, I really think it's sinister. And it is. And the self-care, like, the genre of self-care on the internet that I hate the most is probably clean eating, because...
it's a vile term to me.
Because when I was, you know, in high school and then early college, I spent a lot of time on not necessarily clean eating Instagram, but food Instagram, eating disorder recovery Instagram. And because I was on that side, clean eating is a part of that. It's clean eating is unfortunately a huge part of recovery spaces, which, if any of our listeners are in eating disorder recovery, just get off of that, because it is not for you. It is really, no, it is, like you said, it's about optimization and it's about how can I recover in the way that is still going to keep me skinny and still going to make me not feel out of control. When unfortunately, like, that's is a part of life, is feeling out of control. And food, you know, it's like, it's such a messy part of our life. And that is something that is important for my self-care, is eating what I can. And, you know, I always say, like, the best breakfast I can have is one that I'll eat, because I am really lazy when it comes to making food. Dinners, I love cooking dinner, but for lunch, like, unless it's ready, I'm not eating it. And I think that's totally okay to admit that to myself and to say, I'm going to have really easy lunches that may not be completely nutritionally sound, rather than, you know, holding myself up to an expectation that's maintained by Instagram and being told that's self-care.
I truly have never received better advice than, I don't know if I got it on the internet or if I got it from someone I worked with, or because I worked in a lot of childcare spaces in my teen years, but learning to take care of yourself the way you would take care of a 5-year-old is like life-changing. Like, when you think about the fact that, like, when you, if you haven't experienced this, listener, then take my word for it. When you watch a 3-year-old and you're trying to get them to eat dinner, you don't actually give a shit what that dinner looks like. You don't give a shit what the, like, the combination of flavors even is, because if they're eating a couple things that are, like, good for their growing body, then you're satisfied. And like, I try to, like, look at my self-care in that way of, like, if the things I do throughout my day are good for me, like, because they feel right, but also, like, yeah, I don't like to focus on, like, nutritional value or whatever the fuck, but, like, I know when I eat something of, like, this makes my body feel nice.
Yeah.
And I don't care if the flavor doesn't match the other thing on this plate. And I also don't care in what order I eat, like, my meals, as long as I'm eating things that are, like, enough. Like,
and I know that you hate intuitive eating, and I also hate intuitive eating. And I feel like intuitive eating kind of exists in the same space of, it's like, well, this is a way to optimize your your eating schedule in a way that is the best, makes you the best person, because then you won't overeat, you won't undereat, you'll eat the perfect amount, which doesn't exist. You know, overeating and undereating is a part of, like, your day-to-day life. Like, it's just really not that deep. And I hate, we both hate intuitive eating. We should just do a whole episode on anti-intuitive eating.
I am deeply sorry, like, in advance for any, or not in advance, in hindsight and in advance, for anyone who this conversation is triggering for, because I understand that we have a Tumblr user audience. So, like, this conversation about food might be, but when I was hospitalized, you guys can't see the face I just made. When I was hospitalized, they had us do units on intuitive eating. And I was like, I don't want to do this one. Can I not be here for this hour? Because this is, like, a separate thing, but mindfulness has just, like, never jived with me. Like, the way that it was sold to me, the way that it was taught to me. Like, I did DBT therapy, and it wasn't, like, right for me at the time. But the way that mindfulness was taught as this, like, quiet, all aware practice was just, like, not for me. And I have learned since, it's been like 2 years since then. I've learned since then that, like, I have my own versions of what it means for me to be mindful. And I do think in those ways that mindfulness is, like, part of my self-care. But it's, like, very, very individual. Like, it's not things that again, that I could like explain easily in an Instagram post. Like, it's things that I do privately that feel like good in the moment and also feel good like at the end of the day, like to know that I had done that thing that day. And that's the way I've been approaching my self-care more recently, is like thinking, I have to hand it to Tumblr. I have actually seen like a nice handful of things that really resonated with me about self-care on Tumblr. And I just reblogged one the other day that said, my goal every day is just to have a good day. And it was like, life is so short, so I just want to have a good day. And I was like, yeah, that's it. Like, that's my self-care theories. I just want to have a good day. Like, I don't really care what it takes. I don't, like, even if my day is hard, I should be able to do something that feels like I'm having a good day.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's my concept of self-care. And so when I see Instagram posts or, like, anything posts about, like, optimization and the best workout for this thing and, like, if you have this issue in your life, you should do this. And a sidebar that I won't get into is the obsession with diagnoses because of the wellness culture. Mm-hmm. And I read an article from The Cut about like, why is it that all wealthy people seem to have a million diagnoses? And I was like, oh, that's a good topic. But there is one more quote. I said I was done with the Harvard Business Review article, but I lied. The author writes that about like spending money to be well, it goes back to your point of like comparison online. She writes, this further circumscribes self-care with values of conformity and achievement, as well as their shadow sides, feelings of inadequacy and self-criticism. And that, I think, perfectly encapsulated what I hate about this like broad understanding of self-care is that it's all about what are you doing wrong and what could you be doing better, and it's not about like what feels nice and what you're happy with and what you could keep doing. It's all about like identifying the problem and fixing it, and I don't like that shit, dude.
No, I love to live in denial.
Honestly, I'm gonna say something that's TikTok-y, but like I kind of like the DeLulu attitude.
Denial is self-care.
That's my shit on a t-shirt. That's gonna be our merch. Denial is self-care.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I do agree that I think Tumblr is a little bit more realistic when it comes to self-care than Instagram, because or TikTok, because nobody is really monetizing on Tumblr.
Yeah.
And everybody's, I mean, not everybody, but most people are anonymous. And most people, at least on my dashboard, people I follow are very open about their mental health struggles. Yeah. Like, there's some information that I have been privy to that, you know, probably should have been reported.
Should have handed that shit off to Coco Bot.
Yeah, for real.
I honestly don't follow a lot of people who are very forthright with like their I follow a couple, but they're like very big blogs, which is interesting that they're the most like forthright about their personal lives. But like I really enjoy that some of my mutuals just will reblog something and tag it like, this was good advice. And I'm like, cool. Thanks for sharing that. It's such like a low interactive way. And like, I don't know anything about my mutuals. I don't know their names, so they can't have like a personal brand, right? Yeah. Like, that's...
It's not really somebody that you're aspiring to.
Right. I do not aspire to be my Tumblr mutuals with all love either. And respect. I do not aspire to be them. And I hope they don't aspire to be me, who's blogging about the Raven cycle 15 hours a day in the year 2023. Like, but that's, that's self-care. Me continuing to obsess over the Raven cycle at my big age, that's self-care.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, I'm trying to find, I don't think I liked it. That's sad. I saw, it was a list of self-care things I thought I liked. Oh, I know. I found it. A lot of the self-care stuff that I interact with on Tumblr is focused on my mental disabilities, like depression, anxiety, OCD, and seasonal depression, which, I mean, I think that we all need to recognize the effect that the changing of the seasons has on our mental health. But somebody, Tumblr user Like a Wild Thing, posted all these things that they're doing to ease the transition into winter, like closing curtains earlier, to kind of make, like, the change to when it all gets dark all of a sudden a little bit, less jarring. Lighting candles, upping vitamins. I'm taking a multivitamin now.
Slay.
Doing like certain fall things. I'm thinking of a lot of these things also are like things you need to purchase, but the fact that they're not like is this saying like purchasing extra air filters to help with allergies. So like that's not something that's like linked, to somebody's
Right.
Amazon
That's not
wish
like the air
list.
filter company is not saying like be your best self. Like
Yeah.
like
But
breathing clean air is
like
like genuinely good for you.
yeah. But like for me, when I'm going through a depressive episode, like most self-care routines that you'll see on Instagram are not gonna work. Like I really, a lot of times I'm doing the bare minimum and I am focused on just having a good day or, having an okay day.
Right.
Not feeling the existential dread today. And that's just not something that you're going to get on Instagram. And I don't really go on Instagram that much or TikTok. But I'm not saying that that stuff doesn't influence me. And it's not something that I feel like, I compare my depression to the depression that we see on Instagram and TikTok, which is totally not even real. Like it's really not real. And I mean, I'm kind of sick of self-care as a term, but we
So
can
am I.
reclaim it, like,
I feel like I have realized in this recording that I far prefer the term nurturing myself
That's
to
lovely.
self-care, because self-care just feels so watered down and it feels so connected to the capitalist wellness industry in like an uncomfortable way. And I would much rather think of what feels nurturing to me.
I like
Because I
that.
like thinking of myself like a little plant in the dirt and thinking about like what is gonna help me grow and like help my like roots settle. And like, I don't know, you were talking about taking care of your plants recently, and then I had like a private philosophical moment about like taking care of like the idea of like treating yourself like a plant.
Yeah, that's so nice. I didn't mention it because we had already talked about it and I didn't feel like explaining it all, but taking care of my plants is a huge part of my self-care because, well, it is a little bit of tough love. My plants hate me sometimes. And, like half my plants have fruit rot, half of them have pests. I did just give a plant away because I was like, it's kind of past
Oh.
my level of experience of being able to save it. But the plants that I do have and like watching them grow, it's just, my way of connecting with nature a little bit. Like they are living
Yeah.
things and they're complicated just like me. They have very specific needs. Very specific. If I move them just an inch, some of them will faint. Like it's like a thing plants do is some sensitive ones, if you move them, they'll faint. Their leaves will just droop. And like I get it. I totally get it.
That's so, I love back when I was like using TikTok way more than is actually healthy, which is basically it all. There was this one creator who posts videos watering their plants where they bottom water them and they show a time lapse of their plants soaking up the water, and they have like a kitchen timer in the thing so you can see the clock like move quicker when, and I love watching the ones that they drink the water and all of a sudden all their leaves perk up, right? And I'm like, ah, that's so cool. My body does that too, where I drink a glass of water and suddenly I don't feel like shit.
Yeah, crazy how that works. That's the one thing that the self-care girlies like we're totally right about is that we should be drinking water.
You know, and to conclude, there are a couple things I wanted to share of ways that I have learned about care that are just two podcast episodes, really. I don't know if I've talked about it on here before, but I am absolutely fucking obsessed with the podcast Ologies by Ali Ward.
Yep.
It's the best podcast in the world. Like, I actually fail to think of one that is so varied in topic that brings me joy with every single episode. Like, I don't know. I love my chit chat, like, girly podcasts, but like, sometimes an episode isn't funny and it doesn't hit. And an Ologies episode hits 100% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So there was one episode called Dollarology, which is the study of pain. If you're interested in listening to that episode quite literally changed my life. Listening to this doctor, she's a pain psychologist, talk about what the true definition of pain is and what the accurate treatment for pain is. The cliff notes is that pain is biological, psychological, and sociological. So it is impacted by your social factors as much as your physical body and your mental state. So that was very life-changing for me, was to consider pain in a new light. And then also, I actually can't remember the title of the episode. I'm a dummy for not looking it up. The other one is called Eudaimonology. It's the study of happiness. And that episode was really nice because a phrase I have kept saying that the doctor in the episode did not say, but that I keep saying since I've listened to it, is I hate when the gratitude journal girlies are right. Because the scientist was talking about how writing down three things you're grateful for is actually like scientifically proven to be really good for you.
Yeah.
And I haven't started doing that, but my latest self-care practice or my latest nurturing that I'm doing for myself is I am not really like a big on journaling because I think it makes me spiral. I've just been writing down observations about my day. And that's kind of my form of mindfulness. That's my form of like gratitude being, if that's a verb.
Like being present.
Yeah, basically is like, I am taking note of more things around me. And then at the end of the day, I write down the things that I noticed and it makes me feel like a real person.
That's always good.
I know, it's crazy. And this like connects to my larger goal of decontentifying my mind and getting my brain to stop looking at things and thinking of how they would present in a social media video, because this goes so far back in that my internal narrative is a 2012 YouTube how-to video. Like, everything in my mind is that. And so I want my brain to be a journal page, not a YouTube video. And so I'm doing that. Oh, I said this was going to be my close off thing, but I have one more. When you brought up the changing of the seasons and paying attention to your body, years ago, fine, I saw it on TikTok, whatever. I'm sure this person did not come up with this concept. Well, I'm 100% certain they didn't come up with this concept. But somebody shared about how they reject New Year's resolutions. Because again, it's like this concept of like optimizing yourself. And like, if you don't have a perfect 365 day streak, then you fail like literally on day two. They talked about setting your goals and reflecting and planning season to season. So like at the changing of the season, it's that in spring you, or no, it starts in fall. Like the seasonal cycle starts in fall, right? In fall, you plant the seeds. No, fuck. I'm fucking it up. Fuck. It does start in spring.
Okay. Yeah, spring is when you plant, I think.
Spring is when you plant the seeds. Summer is when you blossom. Fall is when you reap the harvest, when you reap the benefits of the work you've been doing for the past two seasons. And then winter is when you rest and you reflect. And I told my therapist this years ago and was like, yeah, I'm just going to like, it's winter. So I'm just going to work on resting and like being content. And like, I can think about the future, but I don't need to act on the future. And then when spring rolls around, I'll think about like ways that I want to grow, because trees and shit don't grow in the winter. They just rest and conserve their energy so that they can live again in the spring. And I brought this up to her recently and she, I kid you not, she looked at me and went, that's my Roman Empire. I tell people about this all the time. She was like, when you told me that, I have talked about it at least once a week for the last 2 years.
I love that. I do remember you telling me about that too. And I do remember that. Now that it's winter, I'm like, I'm supposed to be conserving. Like, nothing grows in winter and neither should I.
Right. So like this, I think I would like to choose the word nurture over self-care because I want to break out of the capitalist hellscape cycle.
Yeah.
I don't want to optimize. In fact, I want to anti-optimize. I want my life to move slowly and I want to enjoy each moment of it. And I don't want to work until I'm dead.
That's the goal. For me, I would say my self-care is biting the microphone.
I always have the urge to bite the microphone.
Okay. Same. I mean, it's okay. But for me, my parting thoughts would be therapy. Like, you know, for me, therapy, you know, sometimes it's the only thing that like gets me through the week, that it's kind of a check-in that, you know, keeps me accountable. And that's not in an optimization way. It's like a staying alive way and like, you know, still being a person every day way. And I know that there are problems with the psychiatric, you know, spaces and therapy, but no, I do think that it's not something I can live without. And if you haven't tried it, like just try it, see. No, I went through a lot of therapists before I found one that I actually thought helped. So I would say therapy for me, I'm taking my meds, like, you know, little wins, taking my meds.
Taking your meds is a huge win.
It is. It.
That's not a little win. That's a big win.
Thank you. I've been extremely tired because I'm only taking one of my meds, not the meds that give me energy, because they're not stocked yet. So I've been so tired, but before I take my nap, I always make sure that I have taken my meds. And you know, that's kind of what I've been focusing on. I do journal, but I think I like to think of my self-care or self-nurturing in a more view of like, it really changes so frequently, like with, you know, my depressive and anxiety symptoms, they change all the time. And what works for me today might not work for me tomorrow. And that's what I have coping skills for. Like, for me, self-care is more about coping than it is about optimizing. And, you know, maybe that's a blessing in disguise, is that I can't optimize. I'm not in the space to optimize.
Dude,
optimizing. So I'm kind of immune to that.
Optimizing is stupid. And it like,
it is stupid.
It comes with so much shame. Shame is never going to propel you toward a positive change. Never. Yeah.
Radical self-acceptance. That's what I'll say.
Period.
Period.
I have a thing that I've been reminded of that Maggie Stiefvater posted on Tumblr, but it's a very long explanation. So I won't.
We'll reblog it.
We'll reblog it. That's it. I'll find it and we'll reblog it. And so that means that all of you have to get your asses back on Tumblr so you can look at our posts.
Yeah. Yeah. We got to wrap this up because I got to get back to my real self-care, which is smoking a bowl.
Now I have to get to mine, not which is upstairs, washing my hair.
We keep it real.
We're keeping it real. That self-care is so true and so real.
Thank you so much for listening. We are so excited to have you here and hope you tune in again next time. In the meantime, you can follow us on social media. Our Instagram is at xtumblrgirlspod. Our TikTok is at xtumblrgirls. And we, of course, have a Tumblr. You can find us there at xpodcastgirls.tumblr.com. And we kindly ask that if you're enjoying the pod, to give us a rate or review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It helps us connect with the rest of the world's ex-Tumblr girls. Come, join, be our bestie, and we will see you next time. Bye.
Bye.